Do you love to talk about rescue dogs almost too much? Us too. This is why I created a space where we can celebrate it. This podcast is for those who are passionate about rescue because dogs, whether they're a foster or a new member of your family, they rescue us right back. Each week, we invite a member of the dog rescue community to talk about their passion for rescue dogs and how their life has never been the same. This is Rescue Dog Love, a rescue community podcast. I'm Yamini, and this is my first rescue, Bus. Hello, rescue dog parents and lovers of the internet. Welcome to the first episode of the brand new but pretty much the same podcast, Rescue Dog Love. Yes, I have decided to undergo a bit of a change and change the name that for so long, the last year and a half, has defined this podcast. Before we get into the episode, I thought I'd explain a little bit of my thinking, but please look forward to a solo episode coming in the next few weeks with a deeper dive on my thoughts on the word dog mom and why I decided to change. The main thing I wanted to share is that dog love and rescue dog love is something that is not just accessible to women. I wanted to make things more gender neutral, to welcome everyone in our community. And also, honestly, in rescue, you don't have to own a dog in order to be a rescue dog lover. We all love dogs in our own way, and we all help in our own way, whether that is fostering and or volunteering, giving back to your community. There are so many ways to be involved, and I just don't think dog ownership or, you know, being a quote-unquote dog parent is necessarily the way to go. So welcome to the Rescue Dog Love Podcast. Today's guest, now getting into it, today's guest is Courtney. Courtney has been on this podcast before. She was one of my first guests. We chatted raw alongside another fellow rescue person, Laura. This time we're talking to Courtney by herself. Courtney has recently undergone a huge change in that she has started to pursue training professionally. She opened her business, Resilient Canine, and why I thought it'd be interesting to bring her on is that her style of training, which is kind of like a play-based training, is something I haven't really seen before. I am very excited about new ways of engaging with our dogs, and I thought the way she approaches dog training and dog resilience, as her name says, was so interesting. Please enjoy this episode with Courtney. We first start with some catching up on her and Josie, and then we get into a really tearful story about a foster she had that honestly I like teared up listening to her. I teared up editing it. It is really touching, and I hope you guys enjoy learning more about play-based training, and maybe you'll either integrate it into your own routines or maybe even contact Courtney for some help with your puppies. Without further ado, here's our episode of Rescue Dog Love. Hi, Courtney. Welcome to Rescue Dog Love.
Hi, thanks for having me again. So excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you back too. You were one of the first episodes we put out.
Yeah, like early days.
Super early days. And a big part of what we talked about was raw. Before we get into the nitty gritty, I wanted to hear a little bit about how Josie's doing. First of all, since we're talking about raw, how's her raw journey going?
Good. She's doing well. She was on DIY for a while, which I think I talked about in that episode. Right now, I literally just don't have time to do that anymore. So she's back on pre-made, which is fine. But I just add like all the stuff that I add to it. But yeah, she's doing well.
I've been thinking about doing that also because it's so much work.
It takes a lot of time.
And definitely seems like you guys have been really busy with fostering. So how has that been going since we last chatted?
Good. I honestly don't even remember how many dogs I had fostered last time. I don't even know the number now. I think I'm maybe 20 now. I don't know. But we've we've been continuing to foster.
How's Josie been as a foster sibling?
Really good. Yeah. Like, it's rare for her to like not get along with a dog. And usually it's because like the other dog isn't social or whatever. She's just like a really good dog to have around. Like, she like knows to give the other dog space when they first come. She'll play with them if they want to play, but she's really good at like responding to me. If like they're just not interested, like I can tell her like, no, like go away. And she'll just like remove herself. So she's like the kind of ideal dog to have for fostering, because she's a very good role model. Like, that's one of the reasons why we adopted her, because we kind of figured like, oh, she's gonna be a dog that we can have other dogs around and we can like trust her.
Yeah, that's definitely a good quality with a foster sibling.
Yeah. She does most of the work for me, basically.
Yeah, I feel like it's been that way with Queenie, funnily enough. I would say that Boss, as much as we loved fostering with him, he's not really that type of dog. Yeah, he totally is a little bit more forward. He gets frustrated. He gets like territorial a bit. So we've been pausing a lot for that reason. And this is the first time we've had Queenie as a foster sibling. And she and Yara are like the cutest together. They I don't know. Yara just like follows her around, imitates everything she does. Like, this is my number one funny thing, is she's like one of the first non-food motivated dogs I've had. Yeah, she just has like no interest in anything. But Queenie is like the most food motivated dog I've ever met. She's she literally like jumps up and goes crazy. And Yara imitates her. So when I have food out, she like wants the food and acts like jumps up and goes crazy and I have to get her to calm down. And then I give her the food and she's like, no.
That's funny.
Just shows how dogs are ridiculous with each other. Are you working on any specific training with Josie? Anything you guys are practicing together?
Honestly, I am very blessed. Josie is an extremely easy dog. She does not need much in terms of training. I've kind of everything I need her to be trained in, she currently is. I like doing like fun stuff with her. Like we're going to be competing in GRC, which is like this dog sport, not in any of the drive events, but there's a social responsibility test, which is basically just like an obedience test. So we've been practicing for that. I've kind of been slacking lately just because I've had like so many other dogs coming through my door that I've kind of just like forget about that for a while and then like focus on these dogs. But yeah, like every now and then I'll start practicing for it again. I kind of need to get serious about it if I want to like actually pass it. But yeah, I've just been doing that basically. Just it's like a bunch of different position changes, like basic obedience around distractions and stuff like that. So she's pretty good at it, but I have to pass a test.
And that's where the pressure comes in.
Yeah, we don't have like a date or anything, so that's kind of why I'm like, oh, it's fine, I'll just like do it later. So it's basically like a series. It's supposed to be like a social responsibility, like it's supposed to be like for like everyday life, like stuff you should be able to do with your dog. So it's like a front, a middle position. You have to like move in the middle position, like rotate with the dog in between your legs. You do a 2-minute downstay where you like leave sight and then you come back and you greet another dog while the dog is in a downstay. And then there's like a couple of distractions that the judge will decide what they are, basically. So it could be anything. And then you also have to greet 3 people and the dog can't jump on them or anything. Mm-hmm. You have to calmly greet them. Otherwise you get disqualified. And then you do like a loose leash walk through like a figure eight. So it's like, it's basic stuff in concept, but it's usually like the stringing together of things that the dogs struggle with, I find. So just like working on things in small portions and then like throwing them together and hopefully they stick.
Yeah, reminds me of when I had Boss in like my just like basic obedience training class, and there were days where he was perfect and then there were days where he just did not want to do things in a row. He was like, this one was enough.
Yeah,
I'm done. Anything else going on with you guys? Anything fun plans for the summer? Maybe
not really. We're kind of just going slow. Like, work is busy in the summer, so I usually don't have like vacations planned or anything like that. We'll probably go camping a few times. I think we have a few trips planned, but that's pretty much it.
Yep, I cannot wait for summer and camping.
It was really nice today. It gave me like a little like glimpse of summer.
I know, I felt the same. I was just like standing in the sun. I didn't put on sunscreen. And then I was like, I guess I have to start thinking about this. Well, one main reason why I wanted to bring you on the podcast is one huge change that you have started on is you have become a trainer and have started your own business. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been like an interesting transition, but it's been really fun. Really cool to like meet all these new dogs and like people. It's been like challenging, but like really good as well. I'm like learning a lot. So yeah, I've really enjoyed it so far.
How did you get started getting passionate about training in and of itself?
Basically, like, it all started with fostering. Like, of course, I grew up with dogs. Like, I did a lot of dog sitting when I was a kid, which, looking back, I'm like, why did people trust me when I was a kid to watch their dog? Like, I literally watched, like, Dobermans. I'm like, how did people trust me? Like, I don't know how, but I was always passionate about animals. Like, I've always loved animals. I studied ecology in school, so, like, animal behavior and stuff has always been really interesting to me. And, like, my day job is, like, I'm an ecologist, so, like, I still work in that field. So it's always been something that I've really enjoyed. I find it, like, really interesting, and, like, it's something I'm super passionate about. I kind of, like, got my first job out of school, and I was like, okay, I want a dog. Like, it's, like, the logical next step for me. Obviously, I'm 21 and I want a dog, like, right now. So I started fostering because I was like, I can't afford a dog. I just got a job. I need to, like,
it was the number one reason.
Yeah, yeah. I literally, like, applied to adopt a dog, and then it, like, I didn't get the dog because it was already in the adoption process for someone else. And I'm like, thank God that I didn't get that dog, because, like, what was I thinking? Like, no. But so I started fostering with the rescue that shall not be named, and it was, like, a crazy experience. I was, like, approved the same week that I applied, which is, like, the age-old story with this rescue. And I, like, went to a parking lot at, like, 3 a.m, picked up this dog, and then I went home, and, like, the minute this dog came off the van, I could just tell. I was like, this dog is gonna have, like, this dog is anxious as hell. Like, she is going to be crazy.
So, yeah. Like, you're like, this is not my family dog.
Yeah. She was like, well, she was so cute. Like, she was, like, one of the cutest dogs I've ever seen. She was, like, a flat-coated retriever. She had, like, a white blaze on her chest, kind of looked border collie-ish. And she had, like, the most beautiful face ever. And, like, just, like, she's a stunning dog. Like, I think I had, like, hundreds of people messaging me on Instagram being like, oh my God, is this dog available for adoption? Like, as soon as she arrived, like, the instant she arrived, I was like, there's no way I'm keeping this dog, because she's going to be gone in, like next week. So, but she was extremely anxious. Like, as soon as she came out of the van, she was just, like, jumping on people and, like, literally clinging to them. Like, was just so, like, I could tell, like, I was like, this is going to be a lot of work. And lo and behold, she had separation anxiety. And, like, separation anxiety is, like, a really loose term. Like, people kind of throw that around a lot. Like, yeah. I've seen dogs that barked in the crate before that do not have separation anxiety, and I've seen this dog, and this dog to this day is still the most extreme separation anxiety I've ever seen. And I couldn't leave her out of her crate because I was like, she's gonna destroy my house. And I tested it once, and all she did was paw the door. Anyways, she had crazy separation anxiety, so it was a lot of work to work through. I lived in a condo building at the time, so I was like, hopefully my neighbors don't kill me. I just moved here. So it's a really good time to have a dog with separation anxiety.
And were you in school and, like, going to school?
No, I was out in a job, my first yeah. job, but I was going into my work. So I was yeah. working from home a couple times a week, and then I was going into work. It was a lot to manage. Luckily, my walls are at that apartment were, like, insanely thick, like concrete or something, because I didn't really get noise complaints. I just told people, like, if it's a problem, please call me. And no one ever called me. I don't know if they're just being nice, but
wow.
I would, like, stuff owls under the door and stuff to, like, make sure, like, the noise didn't travel. Like, I was trying. But yeah, she got better-ish over time. Like, she still had separation anxiety, but she improved. And just, like, going through that experience and, like, the support that I received wasn't, like, the best. And it wasn't because of, like, anyone who worked at the rescue's fault. It was just, like, there was so many dogs that they needed to take care of. The fact that I had a dog that had separation anxiety was probably, like, not that important, because there was probably, like, way yeah. worse dogs that they were dealing with, yeah. like, bites and stuff. So I was basically just told, like, oh, just keep working on it. And I was like, okay. That was a crazy experience. But I was like, from that point, I was like hooked. And I was like, I need to keep doing this. Like, I was also, like, heartbroken that dog got adopted. I loved her. She was insane and a lot of work, but, like, she needed me. Like, she was, like, one of those dogs that was, like, so needy. And, like, you see them, like, go through this transformation of, like, getting better. And you're like, wow, like, I felt, like, needed, which is, like, really selfish, but it was true at the time.
Yeah. Especially for your first foster.
Yeah, totally. It was, like, kind of like off the deep end. Like, you get a difficult dog, and then you can kind of handle, like, things with ease a little bit more easily. So I kind of just started serial fostering after that. Like, I just kept taking dogs in. There was a point where I had, like, 2 fosters at once, and I was just like, yeah, it's, like, not a big deal, I can do it. And then I adopted Josie, obviously, like, right before the pandemic. She was, like, a different kind of foster. Most of my fosters I had dealt with up to that point were, like, some of them were fearful, but not anywhere near as fearful as she was. Most of them were, like, the opposite, like, high energy or, like, reactive or whatever, had, like, other issues used to work on. She was, like, really shut down, would, like, pee and poo in the house, like, would just not leave her crate. Like, if I let her, she would just stay in there, like, 24/7 and not leave it. So it was, like, a different challenge. I was like, okay, like, I can't, like, copy and paste what I've been doing onto this dog. It's not gonna work. work. It doesn't work. Like every time I take her for a walk, every 5 steps, she just lays down. She's like a 70-pound dog. So like, how do I get her up? Like I'm trying to like drag her down the street. Like it's not work. Stuff like that, where it's just like, it kind of made me like rethink how I was handling her. And it was a huge like transformation for her. Like when we adopted her, she was still really nervous and like scared of stuff, but we could see like the potential. Like we could see her like peeking through. She was really like around dogs, she would really perk up. Like she would like become like more herself. And I was like, I could see like a glimpse of like who she was going to be. And I was like, we need to keep this dog. Like she's perfect when we leave her alone. She like is good with other dogs. She's fearful, but like she's going to get there. And like at this point, she's like put so much trust in us that like, why would we give her up? Like she's already come so far. Like I don't want to like give her away to someone and have them like regress and like go through it again. Like she's mine. Like she's my dog. So we adopted her. And then basically from there, again, kept serial fostering. I just kind of got addicted. Like it was during the pandemic. Like I had adopted her like I think 2 weeks before like we went into lockdown. So like the pandemic was not on my mind when I adopted her.
Yeah.
But because I adopted her at that time, she basically became a pandemic dog. I was like, well, thank God I have this dog because I have nothing else to do.
Yep.
And like my hours were cut at work. Like I was only working like half days at work. So I was like, okay, well, I need something to do. Like I'm bored. Like I have nothing else to do except like hang out with this dog all day. Now my mission is to basically just train this dog like all day. And I guess train other dogs too through fostering. So I just kind of became my hobby. Like I was just doing that like all the time. I would take her and practice recall. I would teach her random tricks. I would like do a ton of confidence building stuff. And I would like sit through like hours of like YouTube videos, like YouTube University and stuff. And I was like collecting sources from like Instagram and all these other places. And I just like, I don't know, it just became like really interesting to me. And I'm also from like a science background. So I found like reading the science like really interesting. Cause like I said, I'm a big fan of like animal behavior. I think it's really interesting. So I just like read stuff and I was like, this is really cool. Like listen to podcasts and just kind of like try things like with my own dogs or with my foster dogs. And then just like, I don't know, I just like kept going. I guess I was also a foster coordinator with that unnamed rescue at the time, which also kind of accelerated my learning curve because I had like 40 to 50 people who were like coming to me for advice at one time.
And they were probably all having issues.
Yeah.
All not, you know, all just having to kind of go solo like you did. So exactly, the more you can help, and the
like,
better.
Honestly, like the guilt of like when I had to reach out to that rescue and like I was provided like basically no support, I was like, I don't want anyone to feel that way. So I like took on this burden of being like basically a full-time plus an employee. Like I was working overtime. I was like on call, you know, at work. I had my phone on me all the time. I was checking it like crazy. It was like really bad. I think a lot of people who've been in the rescue world volunteering internally like get that. Like it just becomes your life a little bit. It's bad. Like we should be setting better boundaries, but it was how it was at the time. And I was just constantly worried like something bad was going to happen. And that like, if I didn't give someone like the support they needed, like the minute they needed it, that they would just like give up on the dog. So it was like this really intense pressure. So I did that and then eventually left that rescue. And then I was like, I'm cutting myself off. Like I need to take a break. Like I'll just foster and not do that because that was like really intense. And even John was like, I'm not letting you do that again. Like straight up, like you're not allowed. Like you were so like, I couldn't even talk to you without you like freaking out that your phone was like giving you notifications. So,
I know. My God, that reminds me of Dan.
Yeah. Me. Like every partner who has like a partner who does this is probably like, oh my God, like so annoyed at us. Just like how it was. I don't know. It was really bad. Like looking back, I'm like, how did I do that? Like, I don't know, but I did it. I swear I like didn't even sleep. I was like constantly like on the edge that something bad was going to happen. I was just like, I need to be ready.
Well, with 40, 50 dogs in your care, like, yeah the chances of that are kind of high.
Yeah. And I mean, there was several times where something bad did happen. Exactly. And I had to be the one to go pick the dog up. It was a thing, but I kind of left that world behind. I was still like really heavily involved in like supporting rescues, but not like internally. I was like, I need to take a break from doing that. So then I was just fostering. And like I said, kind of like using all these dogs as like my test dummies for trying different things out, which was really fun. Like I had some challenging dogs. I had some easy dogs. Like it was just kind of like a big mix, but it was lots of fun. Josie also became like a foster sister and I had to work on like new things with her, like teaching her boundaries with dogs and like teaching her commands that were like useful for having like the two in the house. Threw myself into that. And then I got involved internally with rescues again. At this time I was like pretty like into dog training. Like I was like connected to a lot of different trainers. Like I would message them all the time. time and like ask some questions, or just like meet up with like my friend Mel, who lives really close to me, and my friend Allie, who also lived really close to me. And we would like meet up and like do random training stuff like once a week. And then we would just like chat about like different things. And like, I don't know, it was kind of like weird, like focus group almost, but it was fun. And then I got connected to my mentor, Pete, who's Peter's daughter at K9 Wellness, who my biggest like training inspirations are Jay Jack and Ivan Balabanov. And I was like pretty into like looking into their content at the time, but I didn't really know of any trainers in Toronto that like followed kind of like what they teach. But then I met Pete, and Pete does, and he kind of taught me a lot. I started working with him with Josie and just kind of like honestly pestering him like all the time. Like I would message him all the time and like be like, what do you think of this? Like he's probably like, you're so annoying, leave me alone. But he let me do it anyways. And then I kind of started going to seminars, like dog training seminars, and like paying all this money to like go see these really established trainers like teach. And that was also really cool. I basically got to a point where everyone in my personal life was like asking me for advice all the time, like just constantly. Yeah. And I was also volunteering with another rescue at this point internally. And I was also like doing the same thing with like foster coordinating with on a smaller scale, like better boundaries, but it was still very like time consuming. Like I would do like hour long Skype sessions with fosters, or I would like go to their house and basically give them a free training session for like an hour and a half. It's like at some point, like people were like, you need like better, again, like better boundaries. Like, why are you doing this?
You can still
free?
Do this, but yeah. You can get people to pay you.
Literally. Yeah. So my friends were like, you like do this, like you're volunteering like 20 hours or more a week, like for free. And like, you're doing all this stuff. Like, why are you not offering services? And I was like, I don't know. Like the dog training industry is like really tricky because it's not really regulated at all. Like there's so many different like training styles, like training camps that people subscribe to. Everyone has a different opinion about like how that should be done. And it's a really weird space to navigate. There's people who I think probably shouldn't be dog trainers, but like, that's my opinion. And then there's people who I like really admire. There's no like standard, like you need XYZ to say that you are a trainer. So I struggled with that for a really long time. Cause I was like, I don't want to like be someone who just like wakes up tomorrow and is like, hey guys, I'm a dog trainer now. Like, you know, like now I'm like qualified. I don't know. I struggled with that a lot. Like I was like, how do you determine that?
But you know, you're ready when there's no like, you know, whatever
there's
course
no thing
you take
to say
or certificate. Exactly. Yeah.
There's nothing that you can like really, yeah, exactly. Like there's no like standardized way of saying like, you are a dog trainer now. Like you are ready. Like there's no way of doing that. And like, I struggle with that a lot and I still struggle with it now. It's like this imposter syndrome thing too. Like I always thought like everyone knows more than me. And like, I basically just was at a point where I was kind of like complaining a little bit about like the lack of like this style of training being available to people. And I was kind of annoyed about that. And like Pete, my mentor, was like, well, you can't keep complaining about it unless you're doing something about it. And I was like, I know, but like, I'm just going to complain. I eventually, and like, again, my friends, family, everyone's like coming to me for all this advice. I'm like basically doing sessions now, just like on the side, but like not under like a name. I'm just like doing them with friends, family, people who randomly reach out to me just as like a side thing that I'm just like doing. And then I was like, okay, I'll put a website together. I have to think of a name. So I thought of a name one day randomly and I was like, okay, I have to buy the website in case I want to do it. Like in case I want to do it, like I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to buy the website name in case, because this is a good name. So I like got a Squarespace account and I bought resilientk9.com. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to like make my website now, because now I have one. So I have to like make it, right? So I made a website and then I literally just left it for like 3 months. And I was like, I'm not going to like, I can't do it. I just like, it was like the struggle of like being like, I don't know if I'm ready, but like blah, blah, blah. So finally one day I was just like, you know what? I'm still doing it. Like I'm still doing sessions. I'm acting as a dog trainer. I'm just not like, I don't have a business name. I'm not telling people about it. So like, why am I doing that? And it's all just, the only thing that was holding me back was just like like judgment from other people and like the imposter syndrome. So I'm like, you know what, screw it. Like life is very short, and if I don't do it, then I'm just gonna continue to be like, why? Like what could have happened if I did? Like, would I have really enjoyed it? Would I have like quit like 2 months after I started? Like, who knows? But if I don't try it, then like I might as well do it. And I think part of me is like, doesn't want to fail too. And that's like a huge part of like, again, like the imposter syndrome. It's just like, but you just have to get over that. Like everyone messes up sometimes, people make mistakes, no one's perfect. perfect. Like, whatever. I'm just going to like go for it and see what happens and like learn along the way. And so I did. And now I've been doing it for, I don't know, a few months, and it's been really good. And everyone's been really nice to me, and I've been getting really good feedback, and I've been learning a lot. So I'm glad I did it.
I'm so glad too. I feel like too, this, I don't know if this goes into the imposter syndrome, but it's something that even I think a lot of like dog parents feel. It's just this like, oh my God, trainers do all this stuff and I'll never catch up. I'll never be like that. Trainers just like are just people who dedicate time and money to doing research and implementation and work with dogs that aren't theirs as well.
Yeah. And that's kind of one of the things too, is like, I was going to these seminars and I was like, I'm learning so much, but I don't get to practice this on any dog but my own. And like, that's really lame because like Josie's basically perfect. And like a lot of the stuff that I was learning was for dogs that are like more challenging. And I'm like, well, I need to put hands on challenging dogs if I'm going to like prove that any of this works. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to like start doing it and just see how it goes. And it's been going, yeah, like I said, it's been going really well. And honestly, the hardest part of all of it is just like transitioning from like working with a dog yourself to like teaching someone else. Like dog training is actually like 90% teaching humans and not dogs. So it's like, you have to like really like step back and like everyone is different. Everyone thinks differently. Everyone has a way that they think they want to do things. So that's the hard part, is like teaching the people and like getting people to understand where you're coming from and like the theories behind what you're doing. I'm a huge person who like, I really like get invested in like the why. And that was a big reason why I started getting so into like reading all these articles and stuff, because I was like, I never found a style that really like spoke to me. Like I tried all these different methods and I was like, okay, yeah, like everything has truth to it, but nothing really like made sense to me from like an animal psychology point of view. I was like, I need like to know more. Like I need more information to see why this makes sense. And I like, so I kind of like stumbled into finding out about like play-based training and learning about like the blue ribbon emotions and all of that stuff. And I was like, okay, all like all of a sudden it like makes sense to me. And I'm like, this is like good information.
Well, let's talk about that information, because I'm definitely curious. Tell me about like this approach, why it clicks with you and why you think it helps you with your training.
So one of the like things that I learned about when I first started learning about Jay Jack, who's a dog trainer, he works like mostly with bully breeds, and he worked a lot of challenging dogs. And I learned about this scientist through him named Dr. Jack Panskep. And he wrote this book called Effective Neuroscience. And it's basically discussing like the brain of mammals and like how things work in their head. I read it and I was like, wow, this like makes so much sense. Like I didn't read the textbook, but I read the book Animals Make Us Human by Temple Grandin. And then I read a couple articles from Dr. Panskep that kind of just like helped me understand like the why a little better. So basically the way that he describes like the mammals' brains is like they're all born with the same core emotional system. And within that core emotional system, there's like four core emotions. One of them is seeking, one of them is rage, one of them is fear, and one of them is panic. Seeking is the one where everyone's like, what is that? Like the other three are kind of like self-explanatory. Seeking is basically like curiosity. You want to go check something out. Like you, an example of like a dog, like you toss a piece of food, it moves towards the food, sniffs it out, whatever, eats it, whatever. That's seeking. The seeking system is activated by one of three conditions. A is non-threatening novelty. So like, you know, if you're introducing a new thing to the dog, if it's non-threatening, the dog will be like, oh, like what is this, and like want to check it out. The other is a desire for a reward, and the other is a presence for a reward. So like people use food in training, they will use that as like a reward. That's kind of that concept as well. So when a dog is in seeking, it basically has, it's in the positive emotional system, and it's spending less time in the negatives. So it's not exclusive, like emotions are fluid, as we all experience. You're not just like feeling one type of way all the time. But if your dog is like in fear, you can also like try to get them out of that by increasing the seeking system. So like if you're increasing this, the time that they're spending in the seeking system, you're giving more reps to it, the less likely they are to be experiencing these other emotions. Rescue dogs, this is like really relevant, because a lot of dogs struggle with behavioral problems that stem from those emotions. Behavior drives emotion. Like we know that, it's been proven time and time again in the dog world. So like the more that you can get them out of that and into something else that's positive, that you're going to be like giving reps. It's like a muscle, right? Like you want to be like putting reps on the positive emotional systems over those fear, panic, and rage systems. A good example of like basically a study that was done with pigs actually, which was kind of cool. They set up like an experiment where they did like a sterile enclosure for pigs where there was like basically nothing in it. And the pigs were just like loose in this enclosure. And they were like they were given all their basic needs. They were exercised, they were fed, they were given water, but they didn't really get anything else out of it. Mm-hmm. That was it. And then there was another enclosure that had like toys and like enrichment items and like fun stuff for them to poke around and get food out of. So when they brought a person in to those enclosures to like kind of take notes on how they were acting. When the person walked into the closure that had the enrichment in it, the pigs were like super curious and they were like moving towards the person, like checking them out. When they made different movements, the pigs were like a little bit scared at first, but then kind of like wanted to check out what it was, what they were doing. They weren't nearly that scared. They were active in their seeking system. When they went into the other enclosure, the pigs were like super scared. They like didn't want to approach the person. They're like backing away from them. They felt like nervous, scared, fearful. So it just kind of was like a really good example of like, that's like what we're trying to do. And it's really relevant to dogs who are coming from shelter environments, because like shelters are basically that, like they're extremely sterile. Shelter staff do their best with the dogs that they have, but it's like, they're not living normal lives. They're like under a lot of stress and their fear, panic, and rage systems are like very heightened in that environment. You get a lot of bad reads on dogs in that kind of environment because they're not acting how they would in like a less stressful setting. It gets really tricky with like shelter dogs because you don't know how to assess them properly when they're in the shelter because they're under so much more stress than they would in their natural world. So that's kind of like the emotional systems that I like always go back to. Like whenever I'm working with a dog and they have behavior problems, I'm always thinking about those emotions. Like, what is this dog experiencing? Like, what emotion is driving this behavior? Like, is it fear? Are they like flipping into rage because they're frustrated? Rage is often like leash reactivity. We see that all the time.
Yeah.
Rage is basically just being frustrated. It's like being blocked from the thing that you want to get to. That happens all the time with leash reactivity. Like, put a leash on a dog and you don't let it get to the thing that it wants to do, it's gonna start freaking out. Another thing I like always go back to is the layered stress model, which I also learned from Jay. It's basically just like a model that says like, okay, is the dog healthy? Does it have an appropriate lifestyle? Does it have clarity? Is it comfortable with wearing the leash? And then what are its triggers? And if you can kind of go from the bottom up with that pyramid in order and address each of those things, the trigger shouldn't be as triggering to the dog. It should be like, if those basic needs are met, it has clarity, it has a good lifestyle, it's biologically fulfilled, and it has no health problems, then that trigger that's setting it off really shouldn't be setting it off, or it should be less. It shouldn't be like that big of a deal. Keeping that in mind too, because like you'll hear the common thing often, people will say like, oh, my dog just bit out of nowhere. And then like 2 days later, they take the dog to the vet and something's like very wrong with the dog. And you're like, okay, so health, that's the first thing you have to look at, because if the dog is not healthy, it's not acting how it's going to be normally acting.
It definitely even just reminds me of like the way rescues try to evaluate their dogs, if they're like staffed appropriately to do so and, you know, have the time and aren't swamped. Because I think we sometimes as humans tend to jump to the problem and try to fix it 100%. Versus like thinking about the whole picture. And especially when it comes to dogs and like their basic needs, like every dog is different. Every dog might have a different exercise requirement, enrichment requirement. Like they might need a lot more than like an older dog or a younger dog. So it's always like first dissecting that part, like you said, making sure they are healthy, making sure they are getting their needs met, which I think is also, even though it's quote unquote simple, could feel complicated in itself sometimes.
Yeah, no, totally. I agree completely. Like sometimes like rescues obviously do their best, but they're giving these dogs to people who don't really know dogs that well. And like, it's not anyone's fault that that's happening. Like we are in the GTA, we're foster based rescue, like majority. Anyone can technically foster, you know, you see rescues all the time saying anyone can foster, because anyone can, basically. And that's not a bad thing. Like,
no, it's good, it's good.
But like these, they don't know those things to look for. And like, I learned that when doing like a lot of the foster coordinating, like basic, simple stuff, like people just don't know. And it's like, you have to explain it to them. Otherwise they're not going to understand. And that's why I kind of always go back to these two things, because they're kind of simple concepts to like explain to people. Like they're more complicated than they seem, but like, if you can explain it in like a simple way, it just kind of like reels things in and be like, okay, like take a step back from like the thing that it's freaking out at, or like the problem that you're having, and like look at the big picture. How can we understand this animal better? Why is it getting frustrated? Why is it reacting like that? Like maybe we can like take a step back and figure out like, is it fear? Is it fearful that's driving this behavior? Is it just frustrated because of the leash? Like the little things like that, that you can like kind of just cut and make it a little bit simpler for the person to understand. And the dog benefits greatly usually when you can explain to people why something is happening.
Definitely. Especially when, you know, a brand new person tends to just use this like big term of like aggression when it comes to reactivity, whether it's fear-based or like you said, you know, just leash reactivity overall. And they're like, oh my God, I introduced them to a dog and they were so excited to meet them. Yeah. And then they snapped. Why did that happen?
Exactly. Yeah. Like that's very common stuff, but it's like, people just don't know. Like they just don't know until you tell them.
So one thing I definitely have seen in your stories and overall is this idea of playing with your dog as being kind of like a cornerstone of how you approach training. And first of all, totally. I love that. I mean, my dogs are so playful. Playing with your dog is, I think, one of those things that, like, you know, when you think about it big picture, it doesn't feel like a lot, but it just helps you bond with your dog. It makes you happy. I know that, like, as a human, when I'm having a bad day, playing with my dog and just having that moment together brings a lot of happiness in my life. And I just know as well, for a dog like Boss, who's very nervous and just like uncertain about new things, as soon as play is involved, he is good. He is in a good place of mind. I'd love for you to get into it, explain a little bit about how play can relate back to what you were just saying about
this
positive space that dogs can be in.
Yeah, 100%. Like, play in my head is like the most important thing that you could do with a dog. And it wasn't really until I started learning about play-based training that, like, again, like, everything kind of clicked for me. I was doing a lot of like confidence building with Josie, like making her jump on stuff. And like over time, she just kind of was like, okay, yeah, like I'm just doing this thing. Like it didn't become challenging anymore. And like she was still struggling in certain areas, but I couldn't figure out how to like get her further. I found like play-based training and I always thought like, oh, Josie's just like not really a playful dog. Like she doesn't like to play. She likes to play with other dogs, but like with me, she doesn't really play. Like that's not her thing. She doesn't like to play fetch. She doesn't really understand tug. She'll just kind of look at me with excitement. We have like little funny like personal play games that we'll play together, but I didn't really see that as play at the time. I was just kind of like, oh, we used to do this like funny thing where we like wrestle on the ground. My mentor Pete, like he has this really good document that I recommend people look at on his blog, which is like the four dimensions of resilience. One of the dimensions that he kind of highlights is challenging them at something they're good at. You can do that through play. All dogs can play whether or not you think they can or not. Josie, one of the ways that I kind of watched her like figured out how she liked to play was watching her play with other dogs. I was like, oh, okay, she's like chasing them around the field. She loves to chase them. She really likes to fight. Like she with Scoops, for example, like they just like wrestle all the time. Like it's like her favorite thing in the world. And she's like super rough with them. So like I knew she could play, but for some reason when it came to me, it wasn't happening. And I think there was a long history of me just like working with her with food. Using food a lot is like a pretty transactional. Like I'm giving you the thing that you want, like you're working for it, I'm giving it to you. And then like the transaction ends. I was just kind of controlling her resources. I realized I would like take her meal and like use it to like teach her stuff, which is cool, but it felt manipulative in a way. A lot of people don't really see it that way, but when you like step back and you're like, oh yeah, I'm like literally just using food all the time to like get you to do stuff. I'm like bribing you basically. It was like, I don't really want that to be our relationship. Like it felt like it was like impacting us. And it definitely was, because she wouldn't play with
me. Especially long-term too. Like I definitely see where food plays in when you're trying to build trust with a dog and you don't know them. But I totally understand you, because I feel like without realizing it, that's like a dynamic that's changed with Boss and us as well. Things don't click with him when we're doing food because he's so focused on the food and not us. And that's something I've been unable
to experience that quick. Too with raw. like with raw food, like she can't use her brain. Like she just starts doing like all this crazy stuff. And I'm like, I didn't ask for any of that. What are you doing?
Oh my God. Dan taught him speak. And now it's part of his routine when he's just like, doesn't know what to do. And he does all of his tricks. And it's so annoying. I'm like, this is the opposite of what this was for.
Yeah, totally. That was a huge part of when I had that like moment where I was like, oh, like our relationship is built around like this transaction that we have. Like there is obviously past that. Like we cuddled together on the couch. I take her for hikes. We have a lot of fun like that. And like on hikes was when I kind of saw like her, that side of her where she would get playful with me. Like I would chase her around and stuff. And like, I didn't know at the time that that was like me playing chase with her. That's kind of what opened the door. And I was like, okay. So then I worked really hard on trying to like get her to open up with me to play. Cause I was like, I kind of just want to like throw this food in the garbage and like pretend that I never used it. I started just like giving her meals for free, or like I would use like food like sparingly. Basically I tried to like use it sparingly and focus a lot on play, and it was like a very long process. Like I would literally be in like a field, like I'd go to like a schoolyard and I'd let her off leash and I would be like running around with a toy, like looking like a crazy person. Like people would be watching me and Josie would be like in a corner of the field like sniffing, like could care less. And I'm like literally making a fool out of myself, like running around trying to get her to chase me. And like she'd have moments or sure she would like clue in and like we'd play for like a minute and then she'd be done and she'd just like walk away and I'm like, okay, sweet, like, but progress. So I basically just kept trying like really hard. I learned about like the six phases of play. I was like trying so hard. I started keeping her on leash. That helped a lot because then I could kind of like stop her from just like checking out, and I just worked on it really hard. And now like we have a really, really good relationship with play. Like I can take her to field and like play and train with her at the same time, like ask her for commands and stuff for like 20 minutes. And like, I never thought I would be able to do that. Like I was like, this dog doesn't like to play. And I was literally just wrong. I just wasn't playing a game that she wanted to play. And she didn't think that that was an option for us. It was a very long journey, like I said, but I'm really glad that I did it because I feel like we're a really good place in like our relationship. Like she sees me as like a fellow creature that she can have fun with instead of like just someone who like controls her life. Cause like,
yeah,
when you step back, like, yeah, we like our dogs, like we control literally everything that happens to them. So it's like, that's great. And like, we have to because of safety and because they're dogs. But at the same time, you want them to see you in like that way where like you're a fellow creature, you're engaging in this thing together. Like I want the relationship of like having fun and like you being that person that they want to spend time with to be like the foundation of like what your relationship is.
Yeah.
And that's somewhere where I went wrong in the beginning. And like, I think a lot of people do, and it's not like anyone's fault. Like that's just kind of what the mainstream training is using a lot of food. And there's nothing wrong with using food. Like people do it all the time. I still use food today. Like it's not like out of my repertoire.
Yeah. But you now have like another tool at your disposal. And I mean, yeah. Think about, like I said, Yara's not food motivated. So I do have to think about how else can I engage her? And luckily totally. She is a huge people pleaser. I am actually trying to play with her. So I'm very curious to hear more.
Sure,
because
totally.
She loves playing with my dogs, obviously. So I'm trying to like get in there, use toys, and she's definitely confused.
Yeah, totally. I think that's kind of where a lot of people give up too, because they're like, oh, like they don't understand what I'm trying to do. So I'm just going to like stop doing this because obviously they don't want to do it. But it's usually this, I just don't understand. And they don't like really get what you're trying to do. It's just like, keep trying and like try different things, like do weird things, like try and get them excited. Like if you know there's something that gets them going, like Josie, for example, she plays this game with John that like is just so weird. Like they just lie on the ground together and he blows in her face and she just like tries to like snap at his face. And it's a full game. Like they literally just play this game where like he blows on her face and then she tries to like bite him in the face.
We've done that too.
Yeah. And it's like, they play it for like 10 minutes straight. And it's like, it's weird, but like that is a game. Like the game has rules. Like it has boundaries. She can't actually bite him in the face, but she'll keep trying. But like, that's a boundary. Like if she actually makes contact, like that's a boundary. Like the game is over.
Yeah.
But that's like, it's something that they've made up and they both understand the objective and they like love it. And it's like, it's like this little weird little personal play game. It's a really interesting thing. And I think like with most of my clients, like often like when people get in contact with the dog trainer, it's because I have a problem. So most of my clients are dealing with like problems that they want me to solve. And often I will go back to being like, okay, like step one is we need to build your relationship. And like, I want you to work on that by using play and other ways. But like, I want you to start trying to play with your dog like every day. That should be like something that you keep trying to do. People always are like, but why? Like, I don't get why. And like, yes, the relationship building is there as well. For example, like when you go back to your childhood and you're thinking about like how you were growing up and how you learned certain life skills. Like I can tell you that I learned to share through playing with my friends, like in the schoolyard. I learned like cooperation and teamwork by playing sports when I was a kid. Like these are all like essential life skills that you learn all through play. There's been studies done by a ton of neuroscientists and like they basically found that like most of your brain development happens when you're a child. There's like an insane amount of brain activity that goes on when you're playing. Basically playing is like low stakes contingency testing. So like people feel comfortable like assuming different roles when they're playing. Like think about playing pretend. Like I would always want to be the dog, but I would be comfortable being another thing too. Like I'd be like, okay, I'll be the mom this time. Like people feel like looser, like there's less like expectation on what you're doing because it's a game. There's not like a stakes in it, competition or anything like that.
And that's so interesting, even like as again as humans, when I think about my childhood, my creativity was at its peak through play.
Totally.
Like you said, like through pretend, and then you become an adult and all of a sudden creativity becomes like this huge blocker.
Yeah.
Because of all the pressure. You you put on it. Maybe we can, you know, draw it back to your like emotional quadrant idea. How can you bring that out of a dog who's stuck in another pathway?
I've dealt with this. A good example would be like one of my most recent fosters, Hector. He was a very, very shut down dog. Like, I thought Josie was shut down. I was wrong. Like, this is a shut down dog.
Dogs always surprise you. You're always like, I know everything. And then this dog shows up and you're like, never mind.
Oh, 100%. It's like every time I meet a dog, I'm like, I'm humbled immediately. I'm like, okay, I thought I knew who you were and I was just wrong. So I actually like picked him as a foster. I was a coordinator at the time with the rescue and I was like, oh, he looks like a bully breed. Like, I would love to foster a bully breed. I want to play with them really hard. I'd like been to seminars and I was like, I just want to like try all this like play-based training stuff. And then he got here and he was like so shut down, like just terrified of everything. Like, took like a few days for him to like really want to like come out and explore out of his crate. Anytime we approached him at all, he would pee. That went on for like months. Like, it wasn't like it happened for like the first week. It happened like every time. Every time I put a leash on him, he would pee himself. It's really hard to like watch an animal be that scared. Like, it's extremely emotional, and it was extremely emotional. And I felt like every day I was like, I don't know like what I'm doing wrong, but I feel like I'm making you worse. But I knew better. And I was like, I'm going to look back and be like, oh, I did it, but I need to like get through that. So I was in touch with my mentor Pete a lot. I started playing this game with him like day one. Like, the second day that he was here, he was like out of his crate. And I was like, okay, I'm going to play this game called Treat Chase Game. And it's using food, but it uses food in a way that's like a game. So it's very low pressure. That's the kind of like the idea of getting a dog who's really scared into this kind of thing, is it's extremely low pressure. I'm literally just tossing food and the goal is for him to get curious, activate his seeking system, and he moves towards it to get the food. So I started playing that with him. He picked up like 3 pieces of food very slowly, like walked towards them, was very sus. This is like high value, like hot dogs. He ate like 3 of them and then he just laid down and stopped. And I kept tossing the food and he was like, I was like, okay, so his seeking system is turned off now in fear and I'm not gonna continue to do this because it's not helping. So that was like the first day. Second day went maybe the same. I think third day he was a little better. He was like moving towards it on his own, but I didn't push it. Like, I was really slow. He was not a normal dog. Even I was working on his leash skills a lot because he would have like a full-on panic attack anytime I left the house. Like, anytime I held a leash to go leash him up, like even if I didn't walk towards him, he would just like start peeing. Like, he was like so scared of going outside. And that was probably like my biggest struggle with him. He opened up in the house more, and he had a really sweet personality and he was good with Josie, but he was a little scared of her because of her size. But like, for the most part, he was a really good dog in the house. He just like was just still very, he was not like adjusted. He was still very scared. I would take him out on a walk and like he would literally just start screaming. Like, people would like be staring at me, like thinking that I was like abusing this dog. Literally, he was on like a leash on a harness and he was like screaming, and like he would hit the end of the leash and just spin in circles. And I was like, okay, he's like legitimately like panicking. And like, most people would be like, okay, like don't walk him because like, why would you do that? But it didn't get better when I did that. Like, it just kept getting worse because he was like, oh, we just don't go outside now.
Got even what more, I wanted.
Yeah, I'm even more scared of the outside now that I don't go outside. So I was like, okay, well, that's not working.
It's such a hard balance because you give that type of recommendation to a foster and they'll take it to the next level. I'm like, oh no, I meant like for a week, not for like 3. So it is tough because it is kind of your instinct. You're like,
yeah, exactly. Like, obviously, you see the dog freaking out and you're like, okay, I never want to see you like this again. Like, I'm never going to do this to you again. But like, I was just leaving my front door and he is like not able to do that. And I'm like, you can't have a life where you can't do that. Like, it's not possible. So I'm like, worked really hard on his leash skills. Turns out like the harness was really freaking him out. Like, it was like the restraining feeling was like, I think it's terrifying to him. Threw the harness away. I'm like, no, not using that anymore. And I started using a transitional leash on him, like working him through the fear. And like, he got a lot better. He was like, oh, like I don't need to be scared of this anymore. Like, he was still on edge in certain areas, especially like busy areas, but he improved like significantly. And he learned like, if I'm next to you, like nothing is going to happen to me because like we built that trust, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not going to let anything happen to you if you're next to me. But a lot of the trust that I built with him was through play and like through activating that feeding systems. He was adopted. They hired a trainer as they were supposed to, but the trainer didn't give them the best advice. And it's not, I honestly don't even blame the trainer because like he is such a unique experience of a dog. Like he's not, he doesn't act like a normal dog. He was unique in terms of like cases that I've seen, including like cases that my mentor has seen. Like, and he was basically just like isolating himself on his bed in their home and like peeing himself and like not leaving it. And they were doing like the advice from the trainer, like don't push him, don't make him do anything without consent, all that, like toss treats at him. And he basically just like deteriorated. And I felt like when I got the call, like I felt horrible because like, obviously no one wants to see a dog like that. It's really sad. And like these adopters were so excited to bring him home and like to see him like that. Like they literally thought it was like their fault. They're like, he's like this because of us. And it's like, that's just like really devastating. Like I felt awful. Like when I picked him up, I was like, we still talked. Like we talked while he was with me when they returned him. They returned him because they literally thought that it was like what was best for him. Like they believed that. And I'm like, you know what? Like it probably was because he was in like such a bad state that like they didn't know how to get him out of it. And it was like, you can't really come back from that. Like you see a dog like that, it's like, you think it's your fault, you know? Yeah. Like it's really, really, really difficult to see a dog like that. He came back here. He was actually feeling like a lot of pressure from food because they were like tossing treats at him like they were told to. So I couldn't do the treat chase game with him. That was kind of off the table. He was just eating from a bowl away from me. Like I wouldn't be near him when he ate. But I got back on the treat chase game horse eventually. And I basically was just trying to teach him to overcome pressure because he was really scared and like not good at overcoming things. So I would make it harder for him. Every time we played this game, I would toss a piece of food under my desk. He'd have to go get it under the desk. He'd have to like do an obstacle course kind of to like get to the food. When he came back to me, I would make it harder for him to get the food from my hand. I'd make it like, I'd close my fist and he'd have to like dig into my fist to get it. Putting pressure on him physically, like touching him a little bit, making him stay on the task. And like, I like strongly believe that it was like through this game that he just became stronger. Like his mental game became stronger through play. Like when we're in childhood, like your brain is like more plastic. It means that you're able to handle things better and like face like more stressors and like be able to like handle it versus like having like a rigid brain. Like most people who don't play when they're children and they undergo stress, like people who have like childhood trauma have a hard time dealing with things later in life. Like it just plagues you. It kind of like messes with your head. Like literally it causes your brain to not be as strong. So I was just trying to build like strength into him by like teaching him that he can be loose. Like doesn't have to be on edge all the time. I don't know. He just like got to a point where he was so playful. Like he would play with Josie. He was scared of Josie before. He would play with her. Mm-hmm. He would play games with me. Like I was able to play tug with him, which for like a fearful dog, that's a huge deal because tug is a competitive game. Like we're fighting over a toy and you're like able to play this with me. Like I was like so emotional. I fostered him. I was like crying all the time because I was like, A, like this is so hard, but also like, oh my God, look how far you're coming. And like every time he experienced something new and he was like able to overcome it, he would like get zoomies. Like he was so excited. It was like watching like a child like learn how to play. Like it was honestly literally that.
When a dog comes to me and he's not into toys and then he gets into toys, I always cry. This like special trust.
It was just like such a special experience. Like it was really difficult. I had him for like 3 months or something.
Yeah,
this is why I do this. Like this is, and it like with that experience too, like I was going to seminars at the time and like talking to trainers who do play-based training, and I was like, this is like proof in the pudding. Like this is this worked for this kind of dog that like doesn't have drive. Like he's not a drivey dog. He doesn't need an outlet. Like he's a couch potato. It changed his life. Like he is a better dog now because he was able to undergo this process and like learn that he doesn't have to be scared. I don't know, it's like really reaffirmed like again like why I preach this so much, because it built our relationship and our trust so much. It built him into a stronger dog, and like that's what I'm all about, like resilient canine. Like I want the dogs to become like more resilient and to like be able to push them to become like better versions of themselves. That's kind of how I did it with him.
Well, that's a really touching story.
Like I said, like it was just like, this is like, and it works.
And he was a puppy or was he older?
No, I think he was like around a year. I don't know. They don't know. But he's full grown. Like he looked like a puppy. He was very like.
I was wondering because I saw your stories with him and he looks like a puppy. But
he was basically like a shrunken Rottweiler. Like the rescue called him like a squatty Rottie. Like he was really, he was only like 30 pounds, but he looked like a Rottweiler. He was the cutest dog I've ever fostered. Like objectively speaking, extremely cute dog. I think he had interest because of like how cute he was, but he was like, he needed such a specific home. And I was like, I'm sorry. Like, he's so cute. And I know that people love him, but he's also like not easy. Like you're going to have to like really work to keep this dog in your home. So, but he got adopted. He is living with a canine sibling that looks just like him and is like the same size as him. And it was like such a testament to like how far he came. Cause like, I think his first meet and greet, I wasn't actually there. He was with a temp foster, but it was like kind of dodgy. Like he didn't really want to go up to new people at that point. He was still pretty nervous. And with these people, like they came over inside my house and like he walked right up to them and like was wagging his tail. Like he felt comfortable. He tried to play with their dog like the second that he met her. And I was like, whoa, this is good for him. Like,
yeah, totally.
So, yeah, he was adopted. They have like lots of dog experience and like he's doing really well. He's been there for like over 3 months now, I think. And like they tell me that he's doing great every day. So I'm like really, really happy for him.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love stories like that. And in general, when you have a hard dog that you're fostering and you're just so nervous about the meet and greet stage, even if they progressed, you're just like,
and it actually is like so stressful. And like usually they're like reaching out to you on Instagram and stuff, and you're like, oh, I just like hope they like know what this dog is like. Like it's hard to like fit all of the information about the dog into like a meet and greet.
Oh, for sure.
And it's hard to like tell people like, oh, this dog is like fearful, but like you don't understand how fearful he is. Like it's really hard to like
totally
get that across. And it's hard even for like the rescues to like understand unless they see it. Like it's really very tricky. Like it's a really hard space to be in. And like I get that like returns are very like taboo, and like for sure a lot of returns happen for like really shitty reasons, frankly. This was a different case. It was like he wasn't ready, and that partially was my fault. And I told her that. I was like, you know, like I'm really sorry this happened. Like I don't think he was ready, and I think that's on me. Like I shouldn't have let him go yet. Like it wasn't his time.
Oh, that's so hard. As a rescue, you always have that pressure. You obviously want to get their dog in a home, but yeah, sometimes we have to keep dogs in our care a long time.
Yeah,
make sure they get there.
Every rescue does their best, and like it's just kind of like every dog is different. Everything is like a case by case basis when it comes to like the rescue scene. Like there's no, and it's the same thing with dog training. Like there's no like cake recipe that you can apply to this kind of stuff. Like you just have to keep trying different things and like see what happens and keep trying. Like there's no right way to do things.
Wow, folks, it's our first cliffhanger. Stay tuned next Monday for the final part of my interview with Courtney. We'll be chatting through more about her business and a very, very amazing trip she took to Florida to meet some shelter dogs and help them out. Stay tuned and thanks for listening. See you next week.
Rescue Dog Love is a project by Yamini Cohen, inspired by her rescue dog boss, who you can find on Instagram with his doggy sibling Queenie at Queenie and Boss. To keep up with the Rescue Dog Love podcast, you can follow us at rescuedoglove.com or at Rescue Dog Love Pod on Instagram. See you next time.